morning, ladies and gentlemen. We then take this time to, I would want to allow National Treasury to walk us through the amendments before we can then go through the bill clause by clause. I think amendments have been circulated, have they? Okay. I welcome National Treasury's team led by Nkosana Mashia and Joanne Ferreira and Ola Otse on the table there. Without wasting time, we've already wasted 10 minutes of your time. Can we get on to it?
Thanks, Joanne will walk us through the clauses. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. If we can start with clause 1 on page 6. Just amendments. The first, there's four amendments. The first two is basically just changing very small.
Do members have the original bill? Yeah, if we could work on it for itself. And then the amendment that you are talking to is the space that came today. Okay, proceed.
So the first amendment is on page 6, in line 19, just to change the word needs to objective. So it's a very cosmetic change. The second amendment is also on page 6, in line 32, to insert the word business. It was one of the comments that came through to make sure that those types of common bond issues that you described is made wider. The next amendment is also on page 6 in line 36 to change the definition of executive officer and to insert a new definition which means any employee of a cooperative bank that reports directly to the managing director. During the comments, during the public debate on the whole, people commented that the executive officer should be elected, and indicated that that's the of management that reports to the managing or the managing director who is appointed by the board. The last amendment on clause 1 is page 6, line 53. There was just an additional and there that shouldn't have been there, so that's a cosmetic change. Next amendment is on page 7, in line 38.
I've seen these for the first time now, and I'm not sure, are we going to consider these or how? I mean, I can't even find the line before our presenters on the next line.
Well, okay, two things. Can we request that Joanne slows down a bit? But also, for now, we're going to be just to be able to see where these amendments are. And then we will go back and go through the bill clause by clause. But for now, we're just identifying the amendments as necessitated by our discussions on Friday.
Thank you.
Okay, proceed.
Okay, so the clause 2, page 7, line 38, just to omit the word market. So the sentence would read, enhancing access to banking services under sustainable conditions. Not necessarily linking it to market conditions. The next amendment is on clause 3, in line 54, page 7, the same page. They were just to omit the second or and to substitute and. So the qualification would be that a cooperative bank that takes deposits and has 200 or more members and holds deposits of members to the value of 1 million or more would then be the qualifying criteria. So both the qualifications will apply instead of one or the other. The next amendment is on clause 9, on page 9, in line 43. The bottom is, there was just an additional or that shouldn't have been there. So the line would read, sentence to imprisonment without the option of a fine, and immediately then proceeding to have contribution without the or that's reflected there. Vanessa mentioned is on clause 13 on page 11. In line 29, to omit the word supervisory committee and replace it with the word governance committee. So the line would read, for the establishment of a governance committee and the manner in which it. The next amendment is also on page 11, in line 35. To omit the paragraph E that's D and to replace it with the following paragraph, that certificates, share statements, or any other proof of shareholding must be issued to the members. The amendment was informed by some of the comments that indicated that share certificates has a cost implication, which wasn't an intended cost implication, so we just extended the number of the documents that would constitute sufficient proof of membership. The next amendment is on clause 14, on page 12.
Slow down a bit. Okay, are we together? Clause 14? Okay. Got it.
In line 4, after members, in the line to insert other than deposits referred to in paragraph A. So the line would read, borrow money from the agency and members, comma, other than deposits referred to in paragraph A, up to a percentage of the assets. The next amendment is also on page 12, in line 25, to omit the current paragraph C and to replace it with the following paragraph, open an account with a bank registered under the Banks Act to facilitate foreign currency transactions. The amendment is informed by the need to disalign it with exchange control regulations that are still in place to require the corporate bank to work through a commercial bank registered under the Banks Act in respect to foreign transactions.
Okay.
The next amendment is on clause 16 on page 13 to in line 6. Just to basically it's got a plural and it should be singular. The director, managing director, and executive officer. So it's very cosmetic, just deleting the SC. The next amendment is on clause 23 on page 14.
Sorry, Che, can I just go back to that, the one that page 12, line 20, is it 25?
Page 12, line 25, is that the one? The last one we dealt with was on page 13, line 6, where we were removing the S from directors. Which one are you talking to? Prior to that one.
I'm fine for the moment, thank you.
Are you okay? Okay. Let's proceed.
Page 14, clause 23, and line 59. To omit that whole paragraph A.
Sorry.
Mr. Singh?
Yeah,
that omission also changes the numbering there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it will automatically
B becomes A. Okay. But Why must it be A if there isn't A? Because
no, it's just 23-1.
Okay.
If the office bank may not, without the approval of the supervisor, make an investment to
15-1. Okay. Okay. Was that your... Okay, thanks. Okay.
The next amendment is on page 15, clause 24, to delete the whole clause and to replace it with a shorter clause that reads, deposit insurance obligations of a cooperative bank. A cooperative bank must pay to the fund such deposit insurance contributions as may be prescribed by the minister. The reason for the amendment of clause 24, 25 and 26 is that the voluntary deposit schemes are falling away. Based on the comments, none of the cooperatives that is currently deposit taking feel that it is a viable and sustainable option to do so, and that it would be more appropriate to just invest into the government fund or make contributions to the government established fund. And that view is also supported by the National Treasury. So based on that, we are proposing the following amendments to 24, 25, and 26. So clause 25 is also rejected and replaced by a short new clause that reads, establishment of cooperative bank deposit insurance fund. The agency must establish and must manage a fund to be known as the cooperative bank deposit insurance fund. And then clause 26, just to change the heading, to read establishment and to be control of cooperative bank deposit insurance scheme. And then to omit subsection 1 there, because we've now accommodated it in clause 25. And in line 21, to after percentage insert or amount. So the sentence would read, repay the deposit from its members up to a percentage or amount determined by the minister. And still on page 16 in the same clause at the bottom in line 42 to delete paragraph C. And that was the last chance also necessitated by the falling away of voluntary insurance schemes. Next amendment is on page 17, clause 29, in line 8. So it's page 17, line 8. To omit the current subsection 1 and to replace it with the following subsection. Before an amalgamation, division or transfer of assets, rights, liabilities and obligations by a cooperative bank, such cooperative bank must apply to the supervisor for the approval of the amalgamation, division or transfer. And the amendment basically just makes it clear what the transfer and amalgamation would be about, which is assets, rights, liabilities and obligations. Next amendment is also in the same clause in line 13 to omit subsection 3 and to substitute it with the following section. If an amalgamation, division or transfer by a cooperative bank will result in more than 25% of the assets, rights, liabilities and obligations of a cooperative bank being transferred to another cooperative bank, the supervisor may not approve that amalgamation, division or transfer or issue a certificate of registration in respect thereof without the written consent of the minister to that amalgamation, division or transfer. The current subsection 3 requires each and every obligation or every amalgamation, transfer or division to be approved by the minister, and based on the comments, it appears that it might be prudent to allow the supervisor to approve up to 25%. It also better aligns with the Banks Act, where the same provision has been approved by this committee million were about a month ago. That the first 25% of assets liabilities can be approved by the supervisor acting on his own accord, and thereafter the minister must also consent to that transfer. The next amendment is on clause 30 in, on page 17 in line 21. There was just a word missing. The article offered to insert bank. So the sentence would read, or the line would read, to recommend to the Minister of Trade and Industry that a cooperative bank be. The next amendment is also still on page 17, clause 31, from line 46 to delete C, D, and E. The amendment is informed by the fact that during this consultation process, it is, a lot of people raise the issue that representative bodies need not necessarily be a cooperative themselves. It can be another type of NGO or other institution that also acts on behalf of, or speaks on behalf of cooperative banks. And C, D, and E just related to cooperative requirements. The next amendment is on clause 41 on page 20. Clause 41, page 20, in line 32. To after RAND insert for a continuous period of more than 3 months. So the line would read, deposit in excess of 20 million rand for a continuous period of more than 3 months, inform the South African Reserve Bank that the... And the amendment was just to clarify when, because we have two supervisors, one looking after cooperatives who hold deposits of less than 20 million, and then a supervisor, which is then the South African Reserve Bank, looking after cooperatives holding more than 20. And just to make it clear, when you move from one supervisor to the other, we felt that there should at least be a continuous period where you hold more than 20 million. So maybe you might just in 1 month have a peak and have 20 million in one rand, and you not necessarily immediately move. It should be clear that you are consistently, or will consistently be holding more than 20 million. And also on page 20, also clause 41 in line 34, to insert a new section which obliges the South African Reserve Bank. In terms of the section that must be inserted, read, the South African Reserve Bank must within 1 month of a primary cooperative bank holding deposits of less than 20 million for a continuous period of more than 3 months inform the agency that the primary cooperative bank is subject to its authority and provide the agency with the necessary information. So it's basically just providing for a dual movement system to say when you move from one supervisor to the other or move from the reserve bank being downwards. On page 4 of the amendments, proposed amendments that we handed out, there's an omission or a word that must be deleted. To should just read the South African Reserve Bank must, to just delete the word agency there. I was copying and pasting, so unfortunately that one slipped through.
Chairperson, can I just ask for my own clarity on this, and can you just help me? Going back to that previous one where you said that that page 20, line 32, we say the RAND to insert for a continuous period of more than 3 months. Now, that paragraph starts with the agency must within 1 month of a primary. Within 1 month, but after holding it for 3 months, consecutive months.
Okay, yeah, we have responded to this one, but can I just request that members note the questions to the amendments. We will go back. When we're done, we will go back, and if members want to ask questions on the amendments, we will do that before we go clause by clause on the bill. I'd imagine that members have actually been, you know, picking up such, and if we could just reserve those for the end of the office process. Proceed.
The next amendment is on clause 55 on page 24. Page 24, section 55, in line 15. To include after banking in a comma, including deposit taking cooperatives, the line will then read, support, promote, and develop cooperative banking, including deposit taking cooperatives. It's also in light of the comments that was made to indicate that the support should go further than merely those that have already reached the qualifying targets of 20 million and up to 100 members and 1 million. That one also provides support to facilitate the building of cooperative banks. The next amendment is also on page 24 in line 41. Oh no, sorry, I'm missing one. On page 24, in line 22, just to delete that paragraph G. And that change is necessitated by the changes to section 24, 25, and 26. The next amendment is on page 24 in line 41. Just to delete the and at the end of that line and to insert the following paragraph. B, assist cooperative banks in auditing their financial statements. The amendment was also necessitated by a lot of the comments that indicated that the audit requirements might be unaffordable for smaller cooperatives, and therefore we thought that it might be appropriate that the agency has the discretion to provide support in respect of auditing.
And that also consequently changes our B2C. Is that all? Okay.
The next amendment is on page 25. At the top of the page, to omit F that you currently see and to replace it with enter into and decide upon. So this is the first bit that changes. And it's just for clarity. A number of comments indicated that it's not clear that they can actually enter into contracts. And my view that was that it was implied, but we felt it inappropriate to actually provide for it specifically in the legislation. So the line would read, enter into and decide upon the manner in which agreements must be entered into. The next amendment is on clause 57, still on page 25, in line 30, to omit cooperative banks and representative bodies and to replace with the public. So the sentence would read, or I'll read the whole paragraph, publish a draft of the proposed rule in the Gazette together with a notice calling on the public to comment in writing within a period stated in the notice. So we've extended the group of people that need to, or institutions that must be consulted, to broaden it to the public and not only limited to cooperative banks and representative bodies. Next amendment is on page 29, section 73, in line 31, just to replace it with the agency. It's also just an amendment for clarity. The line or the whole subsection would read, the minister may at any time request the agency to investigate any matter at the agency's own cost or against full or partial payment. Mentioned just for clarity. Next amendment is on page 31, in clause 77, in line 16, to omit is incorporated as a cooperative bank under the Cooperative Act, and the wording there was actually superfluous or unnecessary, as it's already catered for in the definition of cooperative bank. And then the next two amendments relate to the schedule. The first one respect to the national payment system. Basically, all the one currently sees tertiary or secondary cooperative banks, the word secondary and tertiary has been removed based on the South African Reserve Bank's submission to say that all cooperatives should be able to participate in the payment system, provided that they meet the criteria for the system. And that we shouldn't try and provide for a progressive participation in the system. So all those amendments that you see from 1 to 11 are basically to facilitate that amendment, so that all cooperatives participate in not only secondary and tertiaries in a progressive manner. And then the other amendment we propose is on the Competition Act, which was an amendment that the Competition Commission actually mooted in terms of their presentation or representation, just to ensure that where the jurisdiction is excluded in respect of banks, that is also the same in respect of cooperative banks. So we've just inserted where Section 18 of the Competition Act deals with the or excluding the jurisdiction of the Competition Commission, we've included all Section 29 of the Cooperative Banks Act, just to make sure that that will also then apply to cooperative banks. So that's all the amendments.
Okay. Can I then check with members now if there are any questions regarding any of the amendments that you have dealt with? Discussion of clarity, and after that we will then go through the bill's last cycle. Any clarity? Also to check whether this is in line with our discussions on Friday or whether there are any new things and any contradictions.
Mr. Chair, just from that question that I just asked on that 3 months and 1 month, I think it's
page and clause. Pardon?
Clause 41.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Murray.
Yes, I was just, I mean, that the whole thing about after a month and then referring to 3 months consecutive, it's confusing whether it's the first month, and then it's obviously contradictory. So I think, I haven't picked up that it refers actually to 4 months that you in fact are referring to, and I'm just wondering whether that can be confusing. And then the other point, sir, that I've had is just in regards to a definition of that on your amendment that you have given us, clause 55, at page 24, line 15, were you referring to a banking to insure, including deposit-taking cooperatives? Isn't that something that must be in a definition? Because that refers to a definition of a deposit-taking, and what is a deposit-taking cooperative and a cooperative bank, or whether there's a difference between that. I'm just asking for that clarity. Thank you.
Thank you.
think that, I mean, if the alternative is to say within a reasonable time, that agrees the agency must within a reasonable time after the primary cooperative holding deposits in 3 months. But he felt that because we've got 2 supervisors, that it is quite important to draw the line in terms of when you fall in the other category and when you fall in this one, and that there's a specific obligation on the supervisor to act within a month after the 3 month period. I know it sounds a bit confusing, but to say 4 months, we just lose the essence. Because the cooperative must, or cooperative bank must hold deposits for 3 months consecutively are in excess of 20 million. And when that event has happened, the supervisor has 30 days within which to notify the other supervisor that this entity is now becoming its responsibility.
Okay. Can we take it that now that you've clarified it, Mr. Murray is happy? And, give lawyers some work. They will continue to interpret these things as and when the time comes. Mr. Gibson?
Should make the wording clearer. If an agency holds amounts in excess of 20 million rand for 3 consecutive months, then within 1 month thereafter, they shall do so and so. And then it's clear.
Is that okay?
Yeah, we can change the wording along.
Yeah, it's very uncharacteristic of a lawyer to clarify things. He's supposed to complicate them so that they have one. You're getting out of it. You won't be accepted. Okay. Mr. Mare, there was another question by Mr. Mare with regard to the definition. Can we respond to that? Which definition of that? The deposit taking, part of it.
A deposit taking cooperative is not defined in the Cooperative Banks Act, but if one looks at Section 1, before the introduction to the definition section, it reads, in this Act, unless the context indicates otherwise, or a word or expression to which a meaning has been assigned in the Cooperative Act has the meaning assigned to it in that Act. So that the Cooperative Act will assist in respect of the cooperative bit, defining what that means. And I think deposit taking is quite a clear, it's clearly understood what the deposit constitutes.
Okay, Ms. Hobbs.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's page 24, clause 55. Now, it wasn't too clear to me, Chairperson, because it starts off by saying point 2, number 2, on page 24 from line 22, amidst paragraph G. Okay, that's very clear, it says omitted. Then it gives a G. Well, then below that, then it gives a new G. It says on page 24, omit paragraph G. So you omit the paragraph G, and then, you have to put that into the mic, the mistake. I think, let them clarify.
It's a clear substitution.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can I just, it is indeed a mistake. It's the same G that you see under the amendment 4B. It reads exactly the same. I must apologize, we presented to the committee on the response of National Treasury on Friday, and only at that point we were clear which ones proposed amendments the committee would support. So I drafted on Sunday, and yesterday morning we discussed, and then we changed stuff around. So I do apologize if a few technical errors have slipped in. But if we can just, on page 5, clause 55, the second amendment, just to delete the G. No, of the amendment document. If we can just delete that paragraph G there. And the reason why we first had it there, and which would have placed an obligation on the agency to say must, and then we thought it might be more appropriate to put it under sub 2, which would allow the discretion with the agency.
Okay, so what we're saying is that we do delete G under 55.1. And then, because then that clause actually that substitutes that goes down to sub 2 as a B. Is that what you're saying? Okay. So you delete G, which changes the numbering there, which means we'll now only go up to L. And then on two, the agency may, we have A and then B. If you look at the B on the amendment, it's exactly the same as the B, as the G that we, that was substituted. Okay. Oh, that's fine. Okay. Thanks, Commissioner. Mr. Singh?
Yeah, Chair, thank you. Just forgive me for my ignorance if I'm wrong. But the word INDORS, I-N-D-O-R-S-E, on page 12, is that a financial word? Page 12, E, 14E, E on page 12.
And endorse, is that, must it be an E? Yeah, no. Thanks. Some members are still awake. Yeah. But I would imagine that there is still going to be a rigorous process also of cleaning some of the things. Yeah. But thanks, that was an eagle's eye that picked it up.
If you look on page 29 of the bill, you've got section 70, clause 73, 1 and 2, and it's just a matter of style really, because you say the minister may at any time request, and in the subsection 2, the minister, comma, at any time, comma, may request. May investigate. So I think you should make the two read the same. Either that or you just take out the at any time and say the minister may request.
Please maintain a consistent style. Yeah. Members, that then concludes that part of looking at this amendment. We now go through the bill clause by clause. Of course, reading it with the amendment now. Chapter 1 will be definitions, purpose of the Act, application of the Act, application of the Cooperative Act and terms of cooperative banks. And then in Chapter 1 we have Clause 1, which is definition. Mr. Mguni.
Just in terms of that first paragraph of the bill, and that relates to a previous question that I've asked, it says there, and I'm just going to read from a certain part, to establish appropriate regulatory framework and regulatory institutions for the cooperative banks that protect members of cooperative banks. Yes, because a question will come from that. To provide for the registration of deposit-taking financial services cooperatives as cooperative banks. And that relates to that previous question of mine with regards to deposit-taking cooperatives. And where you say it's not cooperative banks, but it's also other cooperative deposit-taking institutions. And here it says that registration of deposit-taking financial services cooperatives as cooperative banks. Now, I mean, if it is cooperative banks, then obviously they can't be other deposit-taking cooperatives. Then just confusing to me.
On the first page. Yeah, the title of the bill itself. Yeah. It's similar. Can you clear the confusion?
I'm just giving you a layman's interpretation. The way I understand is that you are saying that there are deposit-taking financial services cooperatives out there who have not been registered. And this bill is providing that they, from henceforth, they will be registered as cooperative banks.
Mr. Mgone, same understanding.
That's correct.
If I can just clarify, there is deposit-taking financial service cooperatives out there, and this bill intends to register those that have more than 200 members and hold deposits of more than 1 million as cooperative banks. Those that hold less than 1 million and have less than 200 members will remain deposit-taking financial services institutions that is regulated under the Cooperative Act. And we did provide for input from the Minister's side, purely because it's a deposit-taking activity which falls within the Minister of Finance's line function as afforded to him by the President. We've proposed an amendment to the Cooperative Act as such. If you look on page 58, just we included the section to say the Minister must, at the request, Minister of DCI, at the request of Minister of Finance, make regulations regarding any matter relating to financial service cooperatives. Because there's other financial services cooperatives out there as well for insurance, another example. Yeah, stock sales, insurers, and then also deposit taking. But it's only those deposit taking ones that exceed 200 members and 1 million that will be registered under the Cooperative Act and then start posing a systemic risk.
Quite okay. Thank you. We were on page 6 on the definitions, and we move on. I mean, chapter 1, definitions, purpose and application up to the top of page 7, and then the purpose of the Act, clause 2. Anything there? Application, clause 3. Mr. Mgone.
Thank you. Actually, what I wanted to raise, it entails clause 3, clause 13, and part of clause 9. Clause 3. Actually, they are all talking about the same thing, of which I think they are, in my view, they were restrictive. I think when you address clause 3, I think you'll address the other issues on clause 13. That's my view.
Yes, we've that's the part that we have dealt with. Now we are on the bill, and we want to be specific now on clause 3 as to what is your area of concern so that you can deal with. Some of the things, restrictive or not restrictive, are the ones that we've already dealt with, and that is why we are at this stage now.
Okay. At the time I said no, I'll deal with them when you come to person.
Raise it, the committee will apply. Will have to apply its mind on that.
Okay, sir. It was the issue of 200 members and the issue of immigrant rent, that is, what if there are cooperatives out there who don't meet this requirement or might meet this requirement, but due to the fact that you need a person that has got experience on running cooperatives, stuff like that, you automatically restricted that the cooperatives work. Okay, I understand the issue of the development agency or that agency.
Yeah.
Is the agency going to take care of all those issues? See, that was my argument at the time when I said, no, let's discuss this first when it is close by close. Because I thought there might be cooperatives out there in the bundles of which they might meet the minimum requirements, the money, and also the number of people. But you might find that there are no people with the experience to do that. And also on clause 7, somebody says a person has been financially was running a cooperative or a business, but has made some mistakes due to that, then he's not supposed to be a cooperative. Of which, in my view, if you're an entrepreneur, you fail twice for 3 times, you won't be able to qualify for first of the rest because financially they said, no, you cannot read it. So those are my argument that it's actually, in my view, it restricts some other people or cooperatives to function.
Okay, some restrictions might be necessary, but let's take a discussion on the matter, because If I had Joanne well when she was responding to Ms. Marais' question, that's precisely the ones that would be covered under the clause that the Minister of Trade and Industry would then have to make application. And those are the ones that are not covered by this Act. But that does not necessarily mean that they may not, you know, enter. But because here we're restricting those that are above the 200, above a million. And for purposes of guarding against systemic risk, it would actually not be proper to open it to all. But, I mean, like I'm saying, perhaps some of the restrictions are actually for the benefit of the industry itself and the financial services. Mr. Mashir.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. During the process of the setting up of this policy, this issue did come up, and the concern that Honorable Mnguni is raising now has been raised beforehand. I think this is, Honorable Members, if you look at this Act, you will realize that it's both about regulation, but it's also about development. And there has been a lot of comment that says that that's difficult to put to get these two objectives in one set of legislation because they are, in a sense, clashing. Now, and I think this debate is to the core of trying to put regulation and development in one hand. What we have done is that we did propose to the committee that we make the registration subject to fulfilling two conditions: the number of members to be 200 and the deposit to be held a million or more. But we also say we are aware that a lot of other cooperatives will not be able to qualify. But we are proposing that that should be a deliberate policy intention. And for those that don't qualify, that's where we add in clause 55. In clause 55 subsection 2, and what we just added is clause 55 subsection 1A, we then say that the agency will support, promote, and develop cooperative banking, including deposit-taking cooperatives. Now, those deposit-taking cooperatives are the ones who would ordinarily not be able to fulfill the requirements. So while we exclude them, we still get the agency to assist them in meeting the minimum requirements. We just think that this is important in setting the minimum standards and not compromising on the minimum standards, but also say that for those who don't qualify to meet the minimum requirements, the agency will assist them to meet the minimum requirements. Now, some of the cooperatives, say for a cooperative that has got 25 members, is not interested in registering as a cooperative bank because of the stringent prudential regulations there. But they'll still want to remain small and they'll still want to take deposits amongst themselves as a saving club. We don't want to force them to register. But if they start growing and they show an interest, and maybe they've got 100 members, they show an interest of meeting the minimum requirements, then clause 55 subsection 1A kicks in to try and assist them to meet the minimum requirements. Thanks so much.
Ms. Fox?
Thank you, Chair.
Do you have a follow-up, Ms. Mungo?
No, so you addressed my question from the 3 and 13, but however, the clause, one section clause 9 that I have to do.
Ms. Fox?
Chairperson, yes, it's on this clause. I also just, I think my hand may have been too low for number 2, but on this clause, it's puzzled. I thought my hand was too low when clause 2 was read out. You know, it was like here instead of there. Yeah. But if I may though, Chair, if I may. Yeah. Chair, it's a simple one on clause 2. The purpose of the Act was the deletion of market conditions, the word market. Now, I noticed earlier on when we got this presentation, there was quite a long explanation about that, which of course still exists in the memorandum. Perhaps we could get some indication as to then why it was then subsequently removed, the word market, which still reflects in the memorandum. And then, Chair, on this issue of the number 3, it was a question I raised at the time of the earlier presentation, accepting that there are 200 members, where in the Act is the provision for when that falls to, say, not even one, but 5 or 10 or whatever below, under exceptional conditions where co-ops are all together, you get a flood, there are deaths, and one thing and another, people decease. What time period have you got to fulfill the requirement? I couldn't find that in the Act.
Six responses, but on the one, the committee did was appraised on the removal of the market conditions because it was in response to submissions made, and the committee accepted that when we dealt with the matter on Friday. Yeah, but the only thing perhaps we would say then in the explanatory memorandum, we should make sure that reference to market sustainability is dealt with. The second question was with regards to when the membership falls to below 200. I know there is a provision, but can you? I'm not going to be responding on your behalf.
I think that's an important point, especially if we do make a similar provision in the case of the 20 million rand and so on. We just haven't thought about the response now. Can you please take some time during the questions and then we'll come back to that one thing?
Okay, can you just note it? And I know the questioner herself will not forget it. We'll go back to get that to you. That's it on clause 3. Mr. Gibson on clause 3.
Mr. Quivis's point here, I'm just rereading it. On line, the third, second line, 3.1, this Act applies to all cooperative banks registered under this Act and to any cooperative registered under the Cooperative Act that makes deposits and has the members. Now, are we saying that this Act does not apply to cooperatives that are deposit-taking institutions that are registered under the Cooperative Act that do not have 200 members? Because that contradicts exactly what was said earlier, that even if they don't comply, we've got to encourage them, support them, promote them. Then this appears now to contradict it.
But they're not registered as a bank.
And we understand that. This Act applies to any cooperative registered under the Cooperatives Act that takes deposits and A, has 200 members, and B, holds deposits for members. Are we saying that the Act therefore does not apply to cooperatives that take deposits that have less than 200 members and less than A? Because that's what this says. Now, I understand that it shouldn't be that. This Act applies to all deposit-taking institutions, whether they're registered, whether they comply or not. And we're going to promote and help them.
Let's get a response, but I don't think that's what you want to do. The people that are below the threshold, that's precisely the ones that are saying the agency must assist in developing into cooperative banks that 55 was addressing. So this one covers those that are above 200 in members, that are above in the million, that are deposit-taking, that are registered as cooperatives. Let's get a wise response on that. Yeah.
Includes deposit-taking cooperatives. In other words, those that could have less than 200 members and so on.
Can we have a response?
If one looks at 55 where the amendment is proposed, it sort of follows on the words support and promote. Support, promote, and develop cooperative banking. And one of the key ways in which you would develop cooperative banking is to provide support to deposit-taking financial services cooperatives. I mean, we could not put in the amendment, and the same will be achieved. The agency has an obligation to foster cooperative banking or cooperative deposit taking. Why we wanted to mention was to just make it very clear that it will also extend beyond only those banks registered in this act. If they, as an agency, as a development agency, interacts with the cooperative sector, that it will enhance banking and provide support to certain depositing institutions. I mean, if it's confusing, then we can just take it off. The fact is that the agency will still be providing support to those entities in terms of training, etc. And that's why we felt it appropriate to provide specific inclusion for them under that section to make it very clear that the support will extend to that, to address a lot of the comments received. But, I mean, we're happy to take it off as well, if it's creating confusion.
Okay. Any further? So what's the committee's view? We remove the amendment on 55. Should we do that? Mr. Mgwen?
No. I agree with Robert Chair. I think the way it is now, it's okay. Because if we insist on Mr. Gibson's Rassi registered cooperative lending for clause 55 for those of it doesn't protect it. Or rather, it becomes more restrictive. But if we leave that as it is now, we are taking care of those even though not registered. I think it remains as it is now. It's okay with the inclusion of clause 5.
You mean with the amendment? Because clause 55A was amended to include deposit-taking institutions. Are you saying that is fine?
Yeah, I think in that
manner,
it's fine.
But the chairperson clause 3 specifically excludes that if they're not registered. It says that act doesn't apply to those. It only applies to those that are registered banks, cooperative banks, or to cooperative deposit-taking institutions that have 200 members or more.
But then I think the purpose of clause 55 now is setting out the general functions of the agency, enjoins the agency to assist those that are excluded by 3
right.
to be
in
developed into...
Can I make a proposal? In 55, you must say, notwithstanding the specific provisions of clause 3.1 herein.
That's act speaking. That's law speaking.
I think that would assist us, Chair.
Pardon?
What would they expect? I mean, our intention here is that in clause 3, we exclude those below or not meeting the minimum requirements for regulation purposes. But in clause 55, we want to include them for uplifting them to meet those minimum requirements. But we think that Honorable Gibson's suggestion helps us. Thanks.
Maybe a follow-up just to clear my mind here. The issue of the common bond here, Gosana, this corporate, they want to register as a cooperative bank. I don't know whether this question should apply here, or maybe the appropriate time to ask. But because of the common bond issue, here we are 150,000, we're 150. And we meet all the requirements. You want it to register the bank. What is it? Because we say because of the common bond issue, we can't find the other members 50 to make 200. We are 150, but we want it to register. We do meet all the requirements. What then? We are 199. We can't get another member because of our common bond. If we get another member, then it will defeat the whole purpose of a common bondage that you want. But we are, for some reasons or other, below 200, by 2 numbers or 5 numbers. What then happens? But we want to register, we do qualify, we do have only the requirements other than the number, the threshold of 200.
Okay, there seems to be a follow-up on that one, but I think the purpose of 55A, I mean, applies precisely to such instances, but Mr. Singh?
Yes, I just want to follow up on my colleague there. You see, what is the entry point? Is it the number of members or the amount of money? Because you may have 150 members with 5 million rand. Is it and or and? I mean, there are two things here.
It's actually both. It's and. It's both. Yeah.
So does that.
Mr. Blood, I think you're just seeing as a point, and I've been debating this in my head for a long time. Unfortunately, I'm not a legal fundi. The point that Mr. Singh is raising is a critical one. You've got 149 members who have got 10 million rand, and they satisfy all the requirements. The point is, I think, those who are of the legal fraternity might help us here. I think there must be a situation where you say, even if they're 150 and they have 10 million rand, they must be registered. I don't know.
Let's go back to the clause itself. But also to say, what we're talking about here is this only would exclude them from this regulation, but would not exclude them from the activity of registration. But this, it's only for purposes of this legislation. Can I get some wise words? But also let's read clause 3 properly. It says it applies to all cooperative banks registered under this Act, and to any cooperative registered under the Cooperative Act that takes deposits. That's the first thing. And has 200 or more members. Or to go to Mr. Singh's question. No. The one that asks now, which is it 200 or is it the monetary threshold? Has 200 or more members or holds deposits of members to the value of 1 million? Can or more? Oh, we said and. We changed it. The amendment says and. Yes. So it's and. So it is both. Yeah. So my understanding was correct. Okay. Yes. Can we get some wisdom here?
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff. This issue was also contentious to ourselves as we're debating this matter. The point here is how stringent do you want the licensing requirements to be? Now, getting a bank license entitles you, in a sense, to make money. And we think that the minimum requirements have got to be stringent. If you don't fulfill them, you've got to grow them. The critical question of the numbers of the members, we've taken it from what the current situation is. On average, all cooperatives that exist now and that are viable have more than 400 members in any event. And you find very few of them who have below 400. So the point of keeping the 200 members there is just to put a minimum requirement. Now, we understand the issue that says, but what if it's 199 and don't imply? But that's just the same as saying, if you're studying for a medical degree and in one of the courses in your curriculum, you have missed to obtain 50% but obtain 49%. Does that mean, therefore, that you're not going to get a degree? It's a similar instance here. We also feel that very strongly that we do need to maintain these minimum requirements because they are stringent, and that what we can do is to assist them in achieving those. Now, that's why we amended Section 55 for the development aspect of it. Now, one of the problems with making it an all is that then you find the most extreme of the cases where you have two people or five people, as in the case of the Cooperatives Act, who've got a million, who want to register as a bank. Or alternatively, you have a community of 200 people who don't even have a cent or just have 1 rand. Who want to register as a bank. What do you do with that? We just think that it's actually a better option to keep it as an end so that you avoid having a community of 200 people with just 1 rand who then qualify to a bank, or just having five people who, out of their wealth, already have a million who already qualify for a bank. The difficulty from our side is that the supervisor will just be forced to implement all the prudential regulations that are as stringent to just those five people. So the economies of scale just doesn't work in this instance. It just doesn't make economic sense to then subject those people to prudential regulation. So we would rather that we keep it as an end, so that at least it works for all concerned, for the cooperative banks, but also for the regulators. But you also don't have a situation where you've got a community of 200 people who just don't have the money, but who have a bank license.
The only comforting thing here is that amongst the submissions we received and the affected people, it never seems to arise unless it arose out of the discussions that you had with them. Mr. Mlotta.
Sure, let's keep it as it is, and then after some time during the implementation of the Act, we'd have to interact with the supervisor and see whether this serves as an impediment to growth of the cooperative sector. And I think a lot of issues will come out of implementation and practice.
Yeah, because at the same time, we do not want to create a situation where there's a proliferation of a lot of them that are going to come up and then again a lot of them collapsing again. And we sit here and we say we shouldn't open the gates too wide, Mr. Asif.
Chair, being 13 years on this institution, I'm learning a lot. I've learned also today you legislate so that when you, in an event there's a problem, you come back and amend. I'm learning the learning curve. The question I want to ask is the issue of the purpose of us coming up with this piece of legislation. If the purpose is not known, then there's a serious problem. In my view,
we're on clause 3.
In my view, I'm on that point. In my view of the numbers, in my view, we look at the rural, extreme rural, the rural areas where people can come together, and you maybe will not be able to find the total number. And there is this issue which Mr. Mguni, Honorable Mguni, and Honorable Mhili, then was taken by Mr. Singh, the issue of the numbers. Then what is the purpose of this? I believe that we as this committee have to look into the numbers and begin to see, is it 200 number a thumbs up, or is it a relevant? I've heard that the Mr. Gosano saying that they range from 400 and so on. But is that really a real issue, or is it a thumbs up, or which what you believe that we want to restrict it to 200? Then that's my problem, because if we are legislating so that it can raise the issue of the common bond, I think the flexibility in that regard, I agree with Honorable Mguni, that is too restrictive. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. But we actually should not look down upon Clause 55. That's that precisely that. That addresses the question that Mr. Asia is raising. And I would want to implore the committee that we proceed to Clause 4. Clause 4, the application of the Cooperative Act. Clause 5, types of the cooperative banks. Seven. Close.
I thought of saying agrees, and I was wrong, because I have not got a mandate from my party to vote. So all I'm saying is I'm happy with what's here. I'm not agreeing to the clause at this stage. We're not voting.
Mr. Gibson, speak your mind, you'll be a free man.
Yes. I take my agrees back, and I simply say proceed.
And you must be careful, Prataji. 15th of September is not yet passed.
Ms. Fox. Josh?
Yes, it's just on clause 6. It's just a reminder that, of course, things like the registration, etc., will all be affected once you've reviewed their 200 points are made. You know, just a reminder on that. No, the point I raised about, you know, one gets death, one gets all these different floods and disasters, and you could lose 10 people overnight or and so on, and it was agreed that they'll come back on that.
No,
I'm just pointing out.
No, fine. No, you're right, Ms. Fox. Registration, vis-a-vis that question. Have we got an answer now?
I think we didn't draft the legislation specifically providing for a situation where there might be a vis maior incident or act of God. But we have the provision for suspension when you no longer meet the requirement. So you're not deregistered, but there's a suspension until you actually meet the requirement. So one would have, unless you can quickly make up amendments, I think in terms of practical implementation of the legislation, one never implemented to say on at 12 o'clock today you didn't have 200 members, you're not deregistered. There's always some sort of rationality or logic built into the application. So I doubt if one would immediately deregister people if they lose 10 people. Obviously, one would need to also investigate and see what the situation is. And if one looks at the clauses around suspension, it creates if you're already registered, it creates a discretion to suspend subject to certain conditions. So one would say the license is suspended for a period until you meet the requirements. I think it's very difficult to draft in a situation. And if we also, like we did for the consecutive 3-month period of holding the patent, have something similar if you, for a continuous period of X period, no longer meet those requirements, there's an obligation to deregister.
Ms. Fox, and then Ms. Lutton.
Chairperson, mine would be a simple one. I was really looking at not so much a suspension, but along the lines of your second point, perhaps a kind of moratorium over 3 months. Which is no suspension per se. The matter is reported. It requires that it's reported immediately, it's known, and then just a 90-day or whatever opportunity to bring the bank back into line with the requirements under those legitimate things which you would mean. Things like acts of God, an entire family, 10% of the village disappear, you know, all of these kinds of things, and they're not so unusual.
And I would imagine also the existence of bodies like the agency, the governance committee, and all those are actually to keep these institutions under check in order to. Mr. Lodge.
Yes, my first point is protest to the use of the word acts of God as a Christian. You know, we blame God for all evil things that happen and say, in nice legal language, they are acts of God. They are not. It's just all the life. But it's true. All disasters, people blame them as acts of God. Isn't God is evil? He's all out to hurt and harm people. Okay, that's what is written in all legal documents, whether it's civil engineering contracts. They say when there's a flood, it's an act of God. It's not. Chair, the point that I want to raise is as a response to what Ms. Fabs is saying. I think we can't legislate for everything. We should reserve a certain element of discretion for the supervisor. If the membership falls below 200, there should be an element of discretion on the part of the supervisor to say, I'm giving this cooperative bank 6 months or 8 months to make sure that they make up for that. So that after 6 months or so, but we can't legislate for everything. Okay.
Mr. Gibson?
Chairperson, I'm afraid I disagree with Joan. I don't think they're going to be deregistered because 10 of the members die in a flood. It doesn't provide that. Clause 3 relates to the application for registration. And the Act applies to any bank registered under the Act. So if it's registered and 10 members die in the river, they're not going to be deregistered because of that. So I don't, with respect, I don't think that applies. But I hate to do this to you. I think Clause 3.2 on page 7 needs to be amended, because it refers to 3.2 right down at the bottom. It says, within 2 months of meeting one of the criteria referred to in Section 1A and 1B, meeting the criteria. Since they now both apply.
Okay. Yeah. Are we agreed? Because it was written like that because it was off. Now that it's end, then it must be amended. Joy?
No, I agree. I think, for instance, like where the numbering needs to change, where we insert a B and the subsequent one becomes a C, for instance, that would also be a smaller amendment, administrative amendment that we will have to accept. I'll put it into the list that the committee will be voting on, but there is a administrative process through Parliament legislation proceeding section that smaller amendments like those are effective to give true meaning to what the intention of the legislation.
Okay, we were already on seven.
Honourable member keeps saying he read my mind, because that is precisely my point, and that is not the response I got. Because it says here, if you meet one of the above criteria, and my point was, what is the member? And I'm sorry, Chair, I asked that question before reading this, and he says that, and the Nkosana is not saying that to me. He's saying you have to meet that 200 threshold.
Yeah, it's actually both, yes. The only thing here was that this had or because it did not take into account the amendment that we have in our hands, which changes the or to and. So it's actually A and B. It's not or. Okay, let's. We are now on 7. Mr. Mbune.
Clause 7, subsection 7, subsection C. Where you say every person that is to be a director, managing director, or executive officer must have experience and blah, 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 blah. I think, again, Chair Jefferson, I see it is too restrictive. Can't you say at least a managing director or a chief executive officer, not that every person is to be a director? Take for instance that I'm running a cooperative down in Velcom, where most of people are minors. They don't have experience in running any financial system. They don't have any experience as far as these things are concerned. Now, I think those people, they don't have the ability to be director, to say one, two, three. As long as you've got a chief executive officer who's got experience, or a managing director who's got experience, then other people, then you should never find myself, those qualifications or those requirements. In my view, again, I should be very restrictive, taking into consideration that most of the people who are in these corporations actually are people who are illiterate.
Mr. Blatter?
I do appreciate the difficulties of Mr. Mguni, but I think we should maintain the standards and say the development agency then tasked with the responsibility of building this capacity. I mean, we just had an interaction with the banking supervisor, and what they have assessed, I mean, out of the research that they did, the survey, they realize that a lot of directors in the Big Four have no exposure towards banking regulation, and therefore they have adopted a course to bring them up to speed to issues of bank financial management or banking regulation. So I think we should keep it as it is,
But then the director, I mean the agency, is tasked with that responsibility of ensuring that whoever is an employee of the cooperative bank at a senior level does get the required training in the process. Otherwise, my problem is that we tweak it too much, then we have a cooperative which has 15 million rand or 19 million rand or 20 million rand with a financial director who knows absolutely nothing about the accounts of a preschool.
I will not allow
the two of you to debate the matter. I would want to take a response, but I would want members to actually familiarize ourselves also with the general functions of the agency in 55. Because building that capacity is at the center of the agency's functions in order to develop the smaller agencies. But also, again, to say that what we would want to see is these banks growing and graduating into, even if they had to compete with the Big Four, if they had to. But at the end of the day, we do not want the situation where we would say, had we not passed this legislation, we would not have open floodgates for everybody to form himself or herself into a bank. And ultimately, Gosana will tell you the problems that currently exist in some of the village banks and some of the banks that have been established in the absence of this legislation, and this legislation seeks precisely to close those gaps. I'm not responding on your behalf, but I'm just saying that members should actually, we should go through all the functions of the general functions of the agency, because I think they answer some of the questions that we would want. Because yes, our people might not have the expertise, but if they have been assisted, they will be able to gain this expertise through Section 55. Mr. Machine.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I mean, I think it's important that we do state that the section on the fit and proper is not a punitive measure. It's actually an enabler. We should remember that we are going to be setting very tight prudential regulations at some stage. Now, these prudential regulations cannot be simplified any further. For an example, if you say that they must maintain 10% capital adequacy, people must understand what 10% capital adequacy means. Unfortunately, that means that on our side, in the implementation process through the agents, we have to have people who will teach them what it means to say capital adequacy. Now, this capital adequacy is going to apply to everyone who's registered as a bank. So, in any event, they've got to understand it. So, more than it be thought as if it's a punitive measure, would rather that people must take it as an enabler of having to maintain what is judicially expected of them to do in this act. Now, one of the difficulties we face is in the implementation. Really, how do you go out there and find people who are barely literate and teach them capital adequacy? It's just something that we have to find beyond this instance. But we do think that it is necessary to have it there as an enabler of assisting the cooperative banks to meet the minimum requirements.
Fit and proper. That's a good.
Yeah, I'm just going to speak my mind out.
Speak your mind, everyone.
Look at clause 9C. Where they say, please conduct activities of persons in business or financial matters. Okay, they have to satisfy that. Or if they don't satisfy that, then you're not qualified. But section 91G4 has taken part in, has been associated with any other business practices or conduct as court
cards
without competency and sound of judgment. Okay, I do agree with a person, and the fact that the person has deliberately robbing people, that is qualified. But you take for instance a person due to illiteracy, financial management. This person is a financial entrepreneur, but because of a lack of skills, financial skills,
or this person is associated with these people, he now won't qualify for to be to be on the board or to be part of this cooperative. I think that again, in my view, it is very restrictive, really. How many entrepreneurs out there are failing at the moment due to lack of skills, due to lack of capabilities? Now you are ruling out those people already with this piece. That's my argument, sir.
Because they are not fit and proper. Ms. Jones, Ms. Fuss, first.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, mine is along that line. I think we all fully support this need for having sound people there and so on and so forth. But, you know, the whole idea of a co-op is to say like-minded people, whatever. And let's be honest, they're supposed to be dealing with that group of people who have no access or limited access to finance. Now, I focus a lot on the prisoners in my constituency, even, you know, those arrested, not convicted, those convicted and so on, and not one of them could, you know, form this co-op, you see. They'd all fail. Now, these are the very people that are telling us we resort against crime because, you know, they can't get finance, they can't get this, they can't get the next thing. Now, I'm not suggesting that we get a whole bunch of prisoners to run every co-op, but what I am trying to say is, can we try, I see there's an exemption clause, and I took note of the exemption clause, Chairperson, and clearly the Minister would want to exempt that kind of grouping, but I would want to encourage prisoners' societies to try and do this sort of thing in some way. Thank you.
But also, and we should also guard against confusing the establishment of a cooperative and the cooperative bank. They can establish cooperatives, but I mean, I think it's the bank part that we're dealing with. Yeah. Mr. Blood. Thank you. I don't know. The issue for me, I understand what Mr. Mguni is saying, and I think it's quite valid and serious. If you have a member of a community in a rural area, we had a business and collapsed that business. And somebody says, look, we can't appoint this person because, in my view, this person didn't have sound judgment when he came to this business. This person is not fit to be a director, to sit on the board of directors of the cooperative bank. It's an issue, but I just want also from my side, I would want to establish whether the supervisor is going to go through all this thing one by one and tick them off and say, you haven't satisfied D1, D2, D3, D4, or is going to take a balanced view and say, I've looked at all these matters. And then, given the concerns of Mr. Mguni, I don't think this is a critical issue. This business failed because it can happen for various reasons. But therefore, I would still want to condone this person to sit on the board.
Are you noting the questions? Because I want to take them all and then we'll respond to all of them. Mr. Gibson.
Chairperson, I think in conducting the debate on this particular clause, we should look at what the purpose of this Act is. Now, one of the purposes of the Act is to promote and advance social and economic welfare of all South Africans. The other is to promote the development of sustainable and responsible cooperative banks. And thirdly, to establish appropriate regulatory framework and institutions for cooperative banks that protect the members of these banks. Now, with respect, if we follow Ms. Fubbs' advice and have the Polesmore Cooperative Bank, I think what we might do is to end up persuading a whole lot of people that there's a regulatory framework, and the fact that they're all prisoners who are directors there, they must ignore that. Their money will be safe in the bank because it's registered. I think really we must not take this to absurd levels. If somebody is a convicted criminal, I don't think you easily make her a director of a bank. That's all we say. This doesn't make an absolute bar to it. In any event, it says a supervisor may
for purposes of assessing whether a director, etc., is a fit and proper person, have regard to all of these conditions. So the supervisor's got to consider all of them. That doesn't mean that it's an absolute bar if somebody has been a director, but if you read what it actually says, is a former director or executive officer of a cooperative bank or any other bank. It's not just a cooperative that's failed, it's a cooperative bank that's failed or the Standard Bank that's failed, which led to the inability of them to pay their. Surely somebody like that shouldn't be a director. And what we, if we're going to protect the public, and that after protect and advance the cause of banking and the access, we must make pretty sure that we don't make the regulations so loose that virtually anybody who wants one can have a banking license and take our people's money with them.
And I think the protection of the investors has been at it has actually been very close to this committee's heart. Some of the cases that we are dealing with today, the credentials and the leader guards and all those things, are precisely because of the failure on the fit and properness of some. Enforcing some of the fit and properness of these things, and we wouldn't want to be party to a situation that has established something that actually is more relaxed on the front. So rest assured, this committee's passion is on the protection of the investors. There were other hands, Mr. Asia.
Yes. Dagi has taken some of my points. I don't think that we have to move with a situation whereby even anywhere where a person has committed a crime after the adoption of the constitution, which will contravene the spirit and the matter of the bill. But nonetheless, Chairperson, in this fit and proper test, I know we in South Africa want to put high standards, and sometimes we want to create a horse. That horse which we are creating, we create a zebra, thinking that we are creating a horse. And the zebra...
Which part of the clause 9?
Yeah, the zebra.
Can members please be aware that we have 70 some odd clauses to deal with. And then
your interjection, Chairperson, when I'm speaking, it is in, taken with serious note. Maybe I'm too dialectical. As a scholar of Marxism, I'm trying to suggest, Chairperson, if we speak about the co-op and we look and want to make it like a banking institution which is very sophisticated, then that's what I'm speaking about in the fit and proper term.
Yeah, again, it's not just co-operatives, it's co-operative banks. No, because I think that's one thing we should actually make sure that we do not find ourselves locked into a debate that otherwise would apply to a cooperative when we are actually referring to a bank. Because I don't think it's all cooperatives that want to be banks. And there's never going to be a situation where we have banks as many as cooperatives themselves.
I'll comment that possibly what we could do possibly to... I agree with Nan. A fit and proper person, 9 until the last one. Though the concerns of Ms. Nguyen, I think, have to be addressed. Maybe what I would suggest is, can we pass it over and then let the flag it and let National Treasury think about it? Because I know a lot of shops that have collapsed that are in rural areas. Currently, they have been rented out. You know, so it's common actually in Limpopo to find foreigners occupying shops there, you know. I don't know whether it was poor judgment of that entrepreneur or what. So I'm just saying, for me, it's, we need to address this concern and be clear about it. Maybe we should flag it and come back to it. Because it says any other business. It's not just talking about co-ops only.
And perhaps also take the cue from the other pieces of legislation like the fires and the other pieces of legislation that otherwise we had agreed as this committee that we should also be in compliance. This should not undermine the objectives of the other pieces of legislation that were passed precisely with the same objectives. And if I recall, I remember well, we had said that compliance with the fires would be part of this legislation. And as I see, your 991G also deals with that. Roman one. A number of questions have been raised. Would you want to perhaps quickly respond to that, and then we move on to the next?
We will again apply on to section 9. But I think as a lot of the honorary members have indicated, that it is a may. And I think. So maybe one can tweak the wording a little bit, because the intention is basically not to bar people that due to circumstances that not necessarily related to the fault was involved in a business itself. For instance, if you have a business and it fails, my reason that you won't, that when the registrar of the supervisor applies, wouldn't bar you. Because it's usually it's referred to deceitful purposes, that person's actions contributed to financial losses against the public, dishonesty. So that whole intention of D is to focus on where a person has been dishonest and intentionally defrauded, basically.
Mm.
So it isn't the intention to cover a situation where you are merely an entrepreneur and because of a lot of circumstances it didn't work out. I don't think the intention is to disbar people in that category. But we will look again at the wording to see if we can't, because it's really to catch people that are deceitful or show tendencies to commit fraud or defraud people or to break people's trust in respect of financial matters. So I don't think it's the intention to catch our people. And I think also, as Mr. Sana has indicated before, the bill is there to build and support these institutions. And we acknowledge, I can't, at least I can manage my own budget, but more than that I'm not capable of. And one would argue that I probably had a good education. But if I join a cooperative now and I want to be a director, Ola and Mr. Sana will have to teach me what to do in terms of financial management issues and prudential issues. I'm a lawyer, I'm not a financial person, so I don't think the intention of the Act is actually to devolve that capacity more. And that one needs to read the Act holistically, continuously. To try and isolate one section from all the other sections, I think it's quite dangerous, because then we do create a zebra, because we start contradicting other sections, etc. And I think it's important to realize that the trust of the bill is development, but also regulation.
Perhaps the department would consider an amendment which would make Mr. Nguni happy, I think, without damaging the public interest, and that is removing D6. But if you take that out, you've still got in 91A the competence and soundness of judgment.
I
gives expression to what is said by our colleagues across there.
Okay. Mr. Mguni? Mr. Mguni looks much better with the removal of 9G6. Would that do any harm to the bill? Okay. So 9G6 is removed. Okay. Can we have some caffeine? 10 minutes and then return. Welcome back. Let's move on to, we're done with 9. On 10, clause 11, clause 12. There was an option. Oh, okay. Okay. Clause 13. Clause 14. Clause 15. Is it the coffee or the tea or or the biscuits or the cheese? Clause 15. Clause 16. 17. 18. 19. Members, please don't play mind games. Clause 20. Clause 21. Clause 22. Clause 23. Clause 24. Deleted and replaced. Clause 25. Yes, yes. That's the one that we have dealt with. The dealt with them. Yeah. Yes. Clause 26. No, 25 was completely deleted. 26. Clause 27. Seven talks about the conversion of primary savings. 28 talks about the conversion. I'm just trying to find a situation where we spoke about any other institution wanting to convert into a cooperative bank. The response we got was that would have to deregister from its current this one and register afresh. I just want some clarity with regards to the interim period, because there is an institution that has been taking deposits that's actually under a particular regime registered there. You know, we cannot guarantee that if it's deregistered today, it will be registered tomorrow. In the period, the transitional period, what is the situation? Just for my own education.
What happens to Old Mutual and Sanlam when they moved from a mutual or a cooperative situation to a PTY or LTD? The moment the registration happens, the assets and liabilities move on registration. So there's not necessarily a leeway or an interim period where it could hang in between and not be one or the other. So the moment the registration happens, the deregistration should happen under this piece of legislation.
Okay, clause 29. Madam Fox.
Well, thank you, Chairperson. Now, that was replaced by an entirely new clause, if I recall, or almost an entirely new one. And what I'm looking at here, Chair, is the amendment itself, the full amendment on one. And it's headed the division or transfer that area. And yet here, when we look at it, we then apply to the supervisor for the approval of the amalgamation, division, or transfer. What I'm just looking at is, it includes the rights as well, does it, that would be transferred. Because the rights are mentioned in the first part, and the obligations as well. So it wouldn't have, it's inclusive of that, even though it just refers to the second.
Would you want to respond to that? I'm not too sure exactly whether I followed the question. But if you did, would you want to respond? If not, can I get Ms. Fabs to clarify?
It would be appreciated, sir. Ms. Fabs can just clarify.
Ms. Fabs, you want to repeat yourself in there?
If I may, Chair, yes. It talks about before an amalgamation or a separate issue, a division or transfer of those assets, rights, liabilities and obligations, such a bank, you know, etc., must apply to the supervisor for the approval of that amalgamation, division or transfer. Now, all I'm asking about is just a small one, is the, with respect to the liabilities, say, and the obligations. Presumably, those liabilities and obligations would be of such a nature that they did conform to the requirements of, say, the new level of banking that would be entailed. So if you move from a primary to a tertiary to a secondary, etc., etc., because you may get this amalgamation and then have an entirely, well, not an entirely, but a new entity with fresh obligation that didn't exist before. You know, the obligation is different for the primary as for the tertiary and the secondary. So my query would simply be, is that covered under this clause?
Yes, Honourable Chair. Yes, we think it would be. It is correct to say, for instance, the majority of the liabilities of the primary cooperative bank would be deposits. And as you go up into the secondary, maybe the liabilities would be different types of, and these would be other forms of deposits other than deposits from the national members. And yes, in these matters, they would be taken care of.
Thanks. That was clause 29. Clause 30. Chapter 6, clause 31. Clause 32. Clause 33. Clause 34. What does it say? Oh, I'm in school. What? Clause 35.
To deal with the matter I raised. You've got the days here as well. For what may, as the Honourable Member Maloto had indicated, perhaps we should simply leave it to discretion. But I'm looking at the days here, 35B, in which you already give the 21 to 30 days or something. And I remember me requesting that, what about some kind of moratorium rather than a suspension?
and I think it was also suggested that perhaps we should simply leave it to discretion. You know, the issue of the 200 members, and though I wasn't referring to an act of God, but an omission of man.
Is that correct, that she does provide for that, Ms. Fuller?
Clause 35 relates to representative bodies. I think to address the Honourable Member Cutler's concern, one will have to look at Section 11, which is suspension and registration or deregistration of the cooperative bank. So it's under that section that one would need to look at it.
Clause 40. Clause 41. Clause 42.
We have, I think it was indicated that clause 41(3), you may make some adjustments in terms of what. Apologies. I think it was indicated that the suggestion made by my colleague Gibson that you may take that into consideration, the suggestion that he made in terms of changing those words. Thank you. Yep. That was in terms of the 20 million and the less than the 3 months and the 1 month and that. We made that provision. I can't remember the fine English words that he used because I'm only Afrikaner.
Can Mr. Gibson remind us of these clever English words he used there? And not to this one. Okay. Okay. So 41 we're fine. 42? It's quiet. 42? I put 42 to the committee. 44? Oh, 43, sorry. That's good. Coffee is working. 43, and then 44, clause 45, Mr. Mbuni.
I was on 45, I think, yeah, the issue has been addressed if we throw to the credit clause 9, because you say the supervisor may take any action that is by the act, which means we were giving wide cause to the supervisor to take any action. So if we leave the clause that says any business, then I think it can take care of it because that doesn't make worry.
Okay, thanks, sir. So 45? Agreed. Then 46? 47, inspection. 48. Yeah. Agreed. 49. Means agreed. 50. In English, Mr. Gibson.
Mr. Murray was in fact right about clause 41. He suggested that it needed some tweaking there. Was this? But I think the department had already accepted that. Yeah.
But can we just verify that? Yeah.
Yes, we have on our chat.
Can you take the committee into confidence? I'm not too sure because these deals were done here, and I mean it would be good for the committee to understand exactly what that tweaking was as we move on. Joy?
I think it relates to 41.3, and then the new sub 4 that we included, that the wording will be aligned, but then to read, if a primary cooperative bank holds deposits of less than 20 million rand for a continuous period of more than 3 months, the South African Reserve Bank must, within 1 month from that date, inform the agency that the primary cooperative bank is subject to its authority.
Thank you. No. It's good to see that members are awake and that Mr. Mare continues to speak his mind in the DA and make sure that even if Mr. Gibson reneges, he brings it back. I don't know what that means during these days. And coming from the other side of the aisle. We were at 50. Agreed. 51. And 52. 53. 54. The mighty 55. That's a powerful one. 56. 57. Part 2, 58. Ms. Fobbs?
I'm sorry I didn't raise this earlier. Certainly the concept of bringing in public bodies in order to expand this and so on, great, totally agreed with. But I wondered, you know, of course it must be published in the Gazette, we accept that. It's also very useful. I wonder how many in the villages get the Gazette. I don't know. Could we not extend it to some other form of media as well?
Some legal minds, because the status of the publication in the other form of media is.
Honourable Chair, we have just agreed that we can, but we'll just explore other possibilities of in relation to the drafting. We can make the media the coverage wider than just the coverage.
Will you advise this committee when we get to the end how it's going to be?
We certainly will.
Okay. Mr. Garcia.
In terms of the publications, in terms of regulations, I agree and understand. I think we as this committee have taken position. That hence we have learned about the regulation that somewhere in the bill that the committee has a glance on the regulations before, because we know that the department is so notorious sometimes printing regulations during a constituency period.
Yeah, when we deal with the section that deals with regulations.
That's
at the moment we're talking about we haven't reached the regulations there. Yeah. No, I understand your yeah, Mr. Mune.
I think perhaps let's leave it up to put in the act now to say not there must be other forms of communication, because that could be the regulation. There are lots of important things that isn't put it. So there are important things that we didn't legislate that there was what form of publication must be other than Gazette.
Yeah, I think the problem is with the timing, like Mr. Afia is saying, because otherwise, in terms of parliamentary rules, those regulations are tabled in Parliament. The only concern is the one that Mr. Afia is raising as to the timing, as to when it is tabled. But they are tabled in Parliament in the agencies. If the committee snoozes and you don't see them in the HEC, then you've lost it. And if also it is tabled at a time when Parliament is not in session, that's when we actually lose sight of it. And perhaps when we get to regulations,
we would join, knows the regular, the lines. Yeah. Okay,
Mr. Mgun is raising a different matter. Mr. Mgun's argument is that we have passed a very important legislation.
No, not
on the regulations. Well, on the issue of publication in the Government Gazette, and we didn't expand it further. So that's the point that Mr. Mgun is raising.
Okay, when those pieces of legislation come before the committee, then we would propose those amendments. Or when the committee feels that some of them need to be recalled, maybe we should do that.
I don't think that she understands. I'm saying, Chairperson, there are other important legislation that we've passed in this house. And the form of communication with the rural people, there's been already a gazette. So I don't think any important reason why should we this one extend to other forms of publication other than the official gazette. Okay, let's find it, the department says, oh, you know, we'll publicize it, whatever, but let's not legislate that for that type of publications or that type of informing the people how they should be informed.
I don't know whether Ms. Pabst was raising it because of the nature of this piece of legislation and whether there's anything wrong in it being the first.
In the Gazette, of course, it's not only the Gazette, and in the national newspaper, in any national newspaper, is provided in Section 4A. But, of course, that would be a minimum requirement in terms of the law. Section 58.4A. It's both the Gazette and the national newspaper. But that would be a minimum requirement. If you just think what SARS are doing now, they presumably also require to publish their details in the Government Gazette, but what they're doing is going on radio, they're doing flyers all around, they're trying to popularize it, and I would think the National Treasury, where it's appropriate, would also take similar steps. It needn't be in the legislation, it's something that they want to do.
Where's the thing?
Yeah, thank you, Chair, but I think Ms. Frobs is on 57.3.2 and not on the appointment of the members. She's still on 57.3.2.
It's actually 57 that we're still on, but yeah, Ms. Frobs.
I can just clarify, the way I understood this, it was referring to the agency itself and not Parliament or the government every 5 minutes, but the particular agency in prescribing certain rules, and given that the agency is intended to provide all this extra support to the co-ops, particularly those in greater need than others, my statement and request was informed by the understanding that, yes, I do agree that sometimes we may have overlooked the Gazette as a sort of thing, but that I would certainly want to encourage all of us, all members, to look towards improving our legislation as we move along to become more inclusive to ensure that we do get beyond the Gazette. Without, of course, I think putting the brakes on work being done. So it was just how do we reach out, particularly in a bill of this kind of nature. I think the Honourable Nguni is quite correct. We have passed other legislation when this was not done. We have. But my appeal would be to start now being a bit more proactive.
Okay. We have the assurance that when we reach the end of this, Mr. Treasurer will come back. So we will then come back to us with how best we handle the issue of expanding it beyond the Gazette. Clause 58.
Yeah, Chair, thank you. I raised at the last meeting the question because there was some submission about sector-specific appointees. And now when I look at the appeal board, 76, I see they're quite specific in saying you need an advocate and you need whatever and whatever, three particular people. So I don't know if Treasury has any thoughts on that, you know, having sector-specific asking the minister to appoint from particular sectors people on the agency. What's the thinking on that?
The task of national security is gone, but I thought we debated this matter, and the agreement was that the minister must just appoint from broad sections of our society, and we'll definitely consider appointing people from those sectors. But the problem is that once you go that other route, then the minister is tied to specific issues, and I think that would be unfair.
You know, that those are the discussions, and I think that's what we agreed to, that we shouldn't tie the hands of the ministers to being successful.
I'm thinking about the issue around the appeal board as opposed to the agent board of the agency. I think it's important to realise that the appeal board should look different, because if your alternative remedy available against the decision of the agency, and I think, I mean, as we discussed it, the membership of the agency or the board of the agency must be a cross-section. But I think when we look at the appeal board, it's quite important to have very specific expertise there to ensure that a fair consideration of the appeal takes place. And that's why we've required a legal person, a person that's got knowledge of corporate banks, and then a financial person. So I do think the two is quite distinct.
Okay, 58, agreed. Thank you. 59?
Mr. Chairperson, there's just one thing here, and perhaps the National Treasury could confirm this. With respect to continuity, particularly as one establishes the agency, as it were, is there no consideration for perhaps some clause just to do with the establishment and ensuring that continuity is retained while you have the rollover of members? You know, because it talks about not more than this, not exceeding that, and so on and so forth. And I suppose that is a framework. But one wouldn't like to lose all of the members the first time round, you know, after the first 3 years. So it's just the principle of continuity.
Any response to that?
We're trying to find the clause that, I mean, we've provided that a person could be appointed for two consecutive terms, but there's also, if there's a temporary vacancy, that the minister may appoint a person pending the nomination procedure. I just need to find that.
Here, 59.2 does refer to a member being may be reappointed but may not serve more than two consecutive terms of office. That's really what I... So in the establishment of such an organization, it would be consecutive. Am I understanding this correctly? You're just appointed, you've just established it, so you can't be reappointed again. Okay, may be reached, but may not serve more than two consecutive terms.
It can serve for 6 years.
Yeah.
So it can serve for 3 years.
You can have the second. It says you can serve twice, but you cannot serve more than twice.
I understood that somewhat differently, but anyway.
You may not serve more than two, but you can serve two consecutive terms.
I won't talk about the third term. We got no right to talk about it.
Is he greeting me
I think the point that Ms. Fox makes is can be accommodated in 59.1, because the minister could appoint for somebody for 2 years, three of them for 2 years, and three for 3 years. So then there's that continuity. Yeah. The minister has that discretion in terms of 59.1, because he may not appoint for a period
of
meeting, three,
but
he might appoint
exactly.
three for 2 years and three for 3 years, so there's continuity.
And that's not undermined the minister's... yes. Okay. So 59.1, agreed. The 60? I didn't hear anything. Not even a grumbling. Oh, okay. 61? Agreed to 62? Miss, 63? Members, I will not proceed until I hear some noise from... A query about the meeting, but you don't want to disrupt the meeting. Go ahead, Ms. Ross.
Yes, Chair, yes. With respect to the meetings and so on, we have in our 12 years, or is it now closer to 13 years, come across agencies of one kind or another, including audit committees, that just become dysfunctional purely because they don't meet this requirement of three meetings or two within a specific year. And there is no clause which enables them when two or more quorums are not reached consecutively to hold the meeting or to take other action. And they become, if you like, just strapped. They can't move. And some very good work then is prevented purely on the quorum process that is there. So I wondered if that was looked at so that that kind of situation could be at least prevented or dealt with when it occurs.
Honourable Gentleman,
can I ask this? You know, if you look at the general offences, anybody who commits an offence, in other words, doesn't carry out the terms of this, can be sentenced to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 10 years. So if the audit committee fails to meet, you put them all inside.
Yeah,
I know, but anybody is bound by this. I'm being flippant. But it is a penalty under the... There is a penalty, and it is an infraction.
Hopefully I'm understanding the question correctly. But they say the agency meets as often as required, but at least a minimum period. And there is a quorum, but it also allows the chairperson to convene a special meeting at any time. So, I mean, the frequency of meetings is catered for. I think it's very difficult to provide for a situation where there's not a quorum that the meeting can proceed. I mean, then the whole basis of the agency in terms of saying it's the majority decision-making. I don't know, Honourable Member, I might just be misunderstanding.
Yes. I think Honourable Fox she's got the point. For instance, if you study number of audited statements from the Auditor General's office, you find out that the audit committee didn't meet, and there are a number of things. Because of the quorum, there's no way in the piece of legislation, even with this one, if the chairperson convenes and a special meeting and with some other reasons, those members who did not attend, they don't attend again, then what?
Yeah, it is. I think it's precisely because of that the auditor also picks it up as a negative, because it is in contravention of this same piece of legislation that establishes the that institution. Yeah, so, I mean, there is, I don't think there is anything that can be done in the legislation to do that, because it says here, I mean, it meets at least four times, and if people have contravened the law, I mean, then they must be dealt with as such. Ms. Sorrell?
I think, I mean, one needs to read it also in the context of the appointment of members to say that the minister may dismiss a member if they are not performing. So I think that's the remedy that is provided for, that should a person not be attending meetings, he's not performing, I mean, the minister may terminate and reappoint a person in his place.
Ms.
Chair, I'm coming from the premise that it's far better to prevent than rely on a penalty. We've all seen how slow the penalties are.
What are you recommending, Ms. Hobbs, as a prevention?
So what I want to suggest to you is this, that you look at the meetings that are taking place and so on. I do hear about the penalties and all this sort of thing. But a decision is dependent upon a properly constituted meeting, which is a quorum.
Mm.
And that's the point. You see, the two are related. Now, if you don't get a quorum or you don't get some sort of mechanism which says you've met twice, no quorum, the next meeting you may take decisions, notwithstanding there's no quorum, or some other mechanism that would override this. Because I think it's a very serious issue. But, gee, I rest by whatever decision now is pursued.
Not so sure whether we cannot be too prescriptive, but I think somewhere in the regulations on this issue, we can come up with a remedy. For instance, I would suggest that the agency should inform the minister so that the minister can move with speed for appointment of a member. So that there should be progress made.
Okay. Are we okay? Sure. Yeah.
I think in terms of the regulations, one can indeed provide for a process and procedure. But I do think also, just to link to the point made, it's also important that the agency and the minister have a good relationship and that there's regular interaction. And that's where you see that there is a provision for ministerial representatives on the agency, and that would also assist a minister in identifying problematic members in terms of replacing them.
Okay. The request is that regulations should regulate the relationship of the minister and the agency. 62 agreed to? Yeah, we'll move on. 63? 64? A very short 65, managing director. 66? Ahead. 67? Part 3, funding. 68? Mr. Mgoni, sorry.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I know legislation does not contain the amount of money that is required to establish whatever body that Parliament enacts. But has there been any thinking on the establishment date of the agency and the funding that will be required and the size of the agency? Because I believe we have a responsibility as Parliament, if we pass something into law, then there must be funds to make it happen.
A response?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. A business case has already been completed with regards to the agency. At the moment, it will consist of about 40 staff members, and it will cost around the region of 23 million with all the functions. Yes, from the first year, then the second year about 26 million, the third year about 27 million. So we do have some estimates on how much the agency will cost.
Yes, 69, 70, part 4, 71.
73, yes. Okay. 74? 710, appeals. 75? Which one, ma'am?
Well, I had it, then it disappeared from my eyes.
When you see it, can you draw it to our attention? We'll go back to it.
Yeah.
Okay. 75. Well, as soon as you find it, just draw it to our attention. We'll go back to it. 75? 75? 76? Agreed. 77? That's chapter 11, huh? Madam Foss?
Sorry to take you back to your person, but it was the one linked to decisions, and then I think we just went on to a sprint. Just this one, which is 63.2B. I just want to get a clarification. It is something that we did try to address in the presentation much earlier. In terms of the fact that any person who is not entitled to sit, I'm talking particularly of a conflict of interest. The person knows they should have recused themselves, doesn't recuse themselves, and the decision holds. And that could be two people who could actually influence the decision in their own favor. So it had been agreed that this would be looked at, but it seems to be very much the same as it always was.
I think we're not entitled to sit related specifically to the qualification criteria, and we'll probably clarify this more. On the concept of interest, there's an obligation on the member to recuse himself, so it wouldn't constitute a not entitlement to sit on the board. So I do see a distinction there, but one could probably say that the fact that any person was not entitled to sit by virtue of not meeting the criteria for qualification.
Okay. 78. What's the thing?
Chair, I think the intention is right there, but just following on Honourable Gibson, maybe some elegant wording. It is an offence for any person in connection with an application that to provide any. Just sort of amend that. It is an offence for any person to provide any information. Do we need in connection with an application for registration as a cooperative bank? Because you've got a heading there, a subheading. It's just an offence for any person to provide any information that to the knowledge of such person is untrue or misleading in any material respect.
Legal mind? Joyce?
In interpreting legislation, the heading is not taken into account. The court would disregard the heading of section when it interprets. And if we in 78 remove in connection with an application for registration, I don't think the idea is to create a general offence to provide information, specifically in respect of application.
Okay. 78, agreed, Mr. Gibson?
I agree with Mr. Gibson to an extent. I don't think it's very elegantly worded. When I was an article clerk, I was taught that in connection with has a sexual connotation. So you avoid saying that. You say with regard to, or regarding, or it is an offence for any person to provide information relating to or used for the registration of a cooperative bank with the knowledge that such information is untrue or misleading in any material respect. You could reword it with it.
Okay.
Exactly the same.
Can we accept that elegance is fine, but I mean whether in connection with the sexual connotation is another matter. We'll deal with it outside of this meeting. But are we okay with that? With that formulation?
Chairperson, have we agreed? Is the committee saying that we should amend in connection with?
Why don't you suggest, we suggest that we change it and say it is an offence for any person to provide untrue or misleading information with regard to an application for registration as a cooperative bank.
It's dull, but it's okay. I can live with it. Does it do any harm? Does it change the, you know?
I think it amounts to the same. I think when
right. If that is the case, let's change it. And outside of this meeting, Mr. Gibson, you'll have to explain to me how is this thing. We'll talk outside of this meeting. Okay.
Jesus, can I confirm that I will have to? I must change the thing.
Well, 90 now. And I think that's another difficulty. Mr. Asia is now coming with a suspect. That we must also be careful that we do not have a situation where the similar words have been used, and then we lose inconsistency. And I would suggest that we overrule Mr. Gibson's suggestion that this might have that connotation. Yeah, no, we'll deal with him outside of the meeting. Your mic is on if you want that on the record. can I recommend that we leave it as in connection with, please? Let's not change it. Mr. Jassy, I just hope I read your mind correctly.
Yes, sir. Because this is, by then I was off record, now I'm on record. Yeah.
Okay, 79? And 80? Oh, yeah. Did you hear that, Mr. Singh?
Yeah,
okay. 81. 82? Then our general provisions. Certification, 83? 84, 85, 86, Mr. Yassir.
The move that the usual clause on regulations that have to be put in here, all regulations, and you know how you put it, helps you know that number of times the departments are submitting regulations to your ICC, to Parliament, when we are not on session. So then the regulations there should come to us when we are on session. And the committee must peruse them.
Ms. Ryan?
If I can just maybe clarify why it's not really provided for in this version, it is the legislation and the pension funds amendment bill, where we ensured that regulations were be tabled when Parliament is in session, that it after was only dealt with in terms of pension funds amendment bill, and this one was already introduced or tabled in Parliament when we discussed or deliberated on that one. So I will put that amendment in this bill as well.
That's the amendment you wanted, sir. Okay, so 86 agreed to with that amendment. Powers 87 agreed. 88 agreed to. 89. Okay, amendment 90. This is just a normal transitional provision. Agreed. Short title. And then the schedules. The laws that are amended are listed on the schedule.
That then brings us to the end of this part of the process. I therefore read the motion of desirability. That's the thing?
Just one, Ms. Pub, the Honourable Pub mentioned earlier.
Oh, yes.
The market condition in the bill, in the opening and the memorandum.
In the memorandum, yeah. But also there was another response that Ms. Pub needed to get before we come to the stage I'm coming to now. Mr. Evan?
If I offend anybody, please excuse me, but my understanding is that when we, or the committee amends the bill as introduced, that you don't change the memorandum of the bill that was as introduced. So the fact that market conditions are still mentioned in the object memorandum and the object of the bill, it shouldn't be amended. We shouldn't be amending the memorandum and the object of the bill.
She's right, because look, the bill without a memorandum. The memorandum is just to explain what this bill is about. The important thing, when it becomes an act, there's no memorandum of explanation attached to the act. The act is without a memorandum explanatory memorandum. So once it's an act, it becomes an act, there's no memorandum of what an explanatory memorandum. So it doesn't matter.
It's not a big deal. I can't remember exactly what was the other question that you said we'll come back to.
There were two sections.
Yes, can we deal with those?
The one is section 11.
Section 11.
Page 2, section 11. Just to address the concerns around the 200.
Yes.
And number of amounts deposited. The proposal is that under 11.1, maybe else, one just needs to assess where it would be fitting, but under A, B, C, or D, insert a paragraph there to read, has not for a continuous period of 3 months met the qualifications referred to in Section 3, and it is unlikely to meet such requirements in future. So the obligation to, or the supervisor may, suspend or deregister a bank if for a period of 3 months, continuous period of 3 months, they have not met. So I think Ms. concern would be addressed in this respect, because if that provision is actually saying that the supervisor may deregister, and that it implies that you continue your registration in the event of.
So what do we say? Are we then going to add that as I, because it goes up to H? Is that what you're saying?
I would like to put it up, more upfront,
right.
Maybe under B or C.
Oh, okay.
So it is just closer, but if you look at the structure of the legislation, it's all wound up directions and conditions.
Okay, so we put it as a C, and then the numbering
yes.
Beyond that changes, so we'll go up to I. Okay. You want to repeat that again? What?
Has not for a continuous period of 3 months met the qualifications referred to in Section 3, and it is unlikely to meet those requirements in future.
Okay.
In the future.
Okay. Okay. And what was the other one?
The other one related to Section 57.
Okay.
It's on the power to make rules in respect of the publication. We're proposing to add in after the word gazette the following words: other electronic and printed, or such other electronic and printed media that the agency deems appropriate.
Okay. Okay. Agreed? Before I agreed to that, then I read the motion of desirability.
that in the opinion of the committee, legislation is desirable to promote and advance the social and economic welfare of all South Africans by enhancing access to banking services under sustainable market conditions. And no, this is not the explanatory memorandum. It's the motion of desirability. Under sustainable conditions, to promote the appropriate regulatory framework and regulatory institutions for cooperative banks that protect members of cooperative banks, to provide for the registration of deposit-taking financial services cooperatives as cooperative banks, to provide for the regulation and supervision of cooperative banks, and to provide for the establishment of cooperative banks supervisors and a development agency for cooperative banks, and to provide for methods connected here therewith. Okay, and then the report is as follows. The Portfolio Committee on Finance, having considered and examined the Cooperative Banks Bill, Bill 13 of 2007, National Assembly Section 75 referred to it and classified by the joint tagging mechanism as a Section 75 bill, reports the bill with amendments. And goes. Let me take this opportunity to thank all of you for your very valuable and honest and frank participation and sleepless night that some of you guys spent, and trust that this bill will realize the intended objectives, and we look forward to monitoring its implementation. And this committee thanks National Treasury and all those that brought in submission, and I also want to thank the committee for all your hard work. The mission is adjourned. The bill has been passed. Thanks. This bill, I'm informed, according to the program, is going to be debated in Parliament on the 11th of September, and then we will send it to the National Council of Provinces for... Yeah. Come on.